Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome back to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are talking about the Hedge Knight, not Knight of the Seven Kingdoms per se, but just the Hedge Knight, getting back into reading that. Me and Matt read it over a week, and we wanted to read it right after the show because we thought it'd be fun just to kind of talk about it. Maybe not even so much the differences, actually, but just kind of talking about how we feel about the book. It's a book that you and I have read, you know, many, many, many times. Did you listen to the audiobook for this?
I did listen to the audiobook, and I glanced back over the graphic novel as well. And, you know, it's always interesting because now, of course, we have the context of the show to consider and some of the changes, and definitely some things I'm like, oh yeah, like Dunk said that instead of Egg in the show, or Egg said that instead of Dunk in the show. There's a lot. We're not going to be able to get to like every single possible difference because there are quite a bit, but none are really like drastic except for some of the things that we talked about. Obviously the stuff with like Maker at the end, and you know, a few other differences here and there. They added a lot of stuff in the show, obviously, with Sir Arlen's backstory and you know, and Dunk's backstory, and then Lionel Baratheon and the Fossaway. So just a ton of stuff. And then since then, man, geez, Warner Brothers might be getting bought. There's all this stuff going on, man. I don't know. We'll talk a little bit about
season two casting for Dunk and Egg.
Season two casting.
Lady Rohan has been cast.
Lady Rohan has been cast. And I think they're finishing up some House of the Dragon stuff. It's coming in June. I think they said they're finishing up some reshoots and stuff like that right now. Game of Thrones movie was, I guess, sort of officially announced. We kind of have known about it, but I guess they reofficialized it. But who knows?
The writing, well, the head writer, right?
Sure, but who knows? Because Paramount might come in and say no or yes, or I don't know.
They said they're putting it all on one app. There will not be HBO branded app anymore. It'll go on Paramount Plus, and I'll be pissed. So
yeah, I can't wait to hear. I can't wait for them to tell us that, you know, the Dothraki are Hamas. I mean, I don't know. You know, I feel like that's a rat.
It's not ideal.
I was hoping for Netflix, but this whole deal, man, we'll just talk about it a little bit here. One, it might not even happen. Like I said before, I don't think Paramount has enough cash to do it. I just saw today their debt, they were just like downgraded to junk. Are they even going to be able to afford it? The company is going to take on so much debt. They already have more debt right now than the company is worth. Then they're going to have to take on Warner Brothers debt. They had to pay they've already paid $2 billion, but they will have to pay $7 billion to Warner Brothers if the whole thing doesn't come. I think Netflix made the right move. And did you see what their CEO said? He's like, well, when you look at the history of Warner Brothers, we're not too worried about it. I think Zaslav is playing Paramount and Netflix is paying him too, because look, if this whole thing doesn't go down for a number of reasons, you have antitrust laws, or Paramount just might not be able to afford them if HBO and their Warner Brothers stock price keeps like, you know, going up, which they have, you know, sort of agreed to a deal and they'll, you know, come to terms and all the stuff, but they may just say no at the end. And I think the shareholders still might have to vote on it, by the way.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of hoops to get through, but if it doesn't happen, Zaslav has already said, he's like, well, then we get $7 billion and we keep on working.
I mean, that would be the best case for me. I would prefer them to just be their own thing. Yeah. Same. Yeah. I just get nervous about like future projects, and, you know, let's say Dunkin' Egg's very successful. And I mean, obviously season one was, but let's say it keeps going and, you know, they plan for 8 seasons, and then you have someone come in and be like, why are we running this for 8 seasons? We can make a new show. You know, it's just like things like that. And we've already seen how executives can hurt a show. I mean, House of Dragons season two, the biggest issue for me is the fact, cutting 2 episodes after they've already written the season. I mean, it's just trash. Like, such a trash move. It's disrespectful to the cast. It's disrespectful to everybody involved. But, you know, and then they, you know, I know there's other stuff people are upset about, but like largely, I think the general audience was upset with the climax of the season. And that's not really Condell's fault. Like, it's not any of their faults. They didn't have enough time to go back and shoot. So, you know, we talk about this kind of stuff a lot just because it does matter as far as like Westeros TV goes.
Right. They already said they plan on letting HBO do its own thing. DC is a different story. Is everything that's coming out right now is they're like immediately want to, they're like, nope. James Gunn is like, there's rumors, of course these are all rumors and speculation, that he might just bounce and be like, I'm good. So that whole thing might just flop again. Like,
yeah, and so, that's another thing, man, is like, you know, you want good talent for these shows, right? Like we get the Aegon, maybe we get a Blackfyre Rebellion, Roberts, what is something, like you want good talent, but there might be people who don't want to work with Paramount because they're kind of historically pretty hard to deal with. So
right. Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I don't know. I mean, you just see all the stuff that they're dealing with. I mean, in every facet, it feels like people are complaining about it. But then at the same time, like they let South Park do whatever they want. I think one, because they're contractually obligated to do so. And yeah. To their credit to some degree, although I'm not super on their side, obviously, they did say they're like, you know, the difference between Stephen Colbert and South Park is that South Park makes money. I don't know whether Stephen Colbert does or not. I don't know the financials of that. I would have to imagine he does, right?
But maybe so, not enough, right? I mean, South Park.
Maybe not enough. South Park's huge. So
yeah, it's part of Americana. Like it's right. It's embedded into pop zeitgeist pop culture.
Right. I know. All this stuff's getting super politicized and it's just dumb.
Also, South Park's Game of Thrones episode is like legit legendary. It's so good.
So many
Hartman's walking through the garden as Varys. He's like, so many. Shut up.
So many episodes of South Park are
wiener, wiener, wiener. Man, what an I need to rewatch that. That was tremendous. Wasn't it tied in with the Best Buy Black Friday?
Maybe.
Yeah, I think it was because I worked at Best Buy at the time and we all thought it was hilarious. Man, good times.
Yeah, I was looking to see George doesn't have any updates or anything, but
now he's done a bunch of interviews. I know he sat down with Peter and I think Dexter as well. Like I just feel like every time I see him, he's, you know, in a seat getting interviewed in his little conductor hat, which I love it. It's
awesome. I just love that his hair is longer now. Peter's hair is this long now.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he is because I think they're like filming it right now.
Thank God.
So sick. I mean,
that's like one of my biggest complaints. I mean, it's not really a complaint, but I've always imagined Dunk with longer hair. I don't visualize a lot when I read. I'm kind of a weirdo in that regard, but I have had like a pretty good image of Dunk and Egg in my head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's dive into the Hedge Knight because this will kind of lead us to some other things. We have a Raven we might get to at the end just for funsies. We may have to do it as like its own Patreon or something. But yeah, let's dive into the Hedge Knight book and we can go through some comparisons now that we have reread it and talk about just some of the things that stood out to us. And I will tell you, first of all, I preach this every time. The audiobook is so amazingly fantastic. I mean, I don't know that I've ever hyped up any audiobook more than the audiobook of this. Is just Henry Lloyd, you know, reaches it, who's Viserys Targaryen in Game of Thrones. It's just such a fantastic job that he does on all three of these things.
Yeah, he fits the story. I think maybe even I've said this before, is like I would like him to redo the audiobooks for the main series, but I actually don't think that's true. I think he just has like a good quiet voice that works for the tone of the story. I don't know if it would work for the main series.
You know who I actually think would do a really good job at it? He wouldn't necessarily do the voices as well, but John he has C. done. Riley. Well, I was gonna say
Danny DeVito.
Well, that Danny DeVito, of course. No, I was going to say Ian Glenn, because he's done a lot of the narrative stuff. He's a lot of like the history stuff, and he's done audiobooks for stuff. Of course, then he's doing. Then does Jorah suddenly feel like the main character? You know,
you never know.
But certainly I feel maybe what they should do is they should actually go. I think a cool way to go about it would be if they went the. Like the Wheel of Time route where you had two different narrators, like a male and female narrator for the POVs.
That'd be I would like that.
I think that could be, I will say that is one of the coolest things about the Wheel of Time POVs is just you have this back and forth and it definitely makes a big difference in immersion.
Helps you kind of track who you're following, at least to a certain degree.
Yeah. You don't necessarily need a full cast, but could certainly be interesting. I mean, just get some of the actors to just read there.
Sean Bean reading it.
Oh god. I kind of forgot he's in Oblivion. Elder Scrolls Oblivion.
He's been a lot of shit.
I know, yeah.
He's done a lot. Right. Dude, I think I do think
Peter Dinklage. If he did the Tyrion Peter chapters.
I'm an idiot. Yeah, he would be great. He'd be fantastic.
Yeah. He could probably honestly do all the chapters.
Yeah, I'd be fine with that.
Okay, so let's dive in here. So again, you know, we're not going to go over the whole story, but just some of the things that stood out to us specifically when going through this, Jimmy. So I have one, but it's going to tie in a little bit to that big theory I read that I did on YouTube. And we don't have to discuss that just yet, but it's very early on. And it was like something I caught even after I had done the theory itself. But, you know, again, that opening scene is just so fantastic. Right. You know, well, one morrow had brought rains that soaked him to the bones. And the one after that brought wet, gusty winds. The next one is chill. By the fourth day, the old man was too weak to ride. And now he was gone.
Man. And I said how important that scene would be to me for the show to be a success. And they definitely nailed it. I think they couldn't have hit it better. Honestly, it's great.
It was absolutely fantastic. Just some other lines too here. He's like, I'd leave your sword, but it would rust in the ground. He said at last, apologetic. The gods will give you a new one, I guess. I wish you didn't die, sir. He paused, uncertain what else needed to be said. He didn't know any prayers, not all the way through. The old man had never been much for praying. You were a true knight, and you never beat me when I didn't deserve it. Except that one time in Maidenpool. It was the inn boy who ate the widow woman's pie. Not me, I told you. It doesn't matter now. The gods keep you, sir. He kicked dirt in the hole and then began to fill it methodically, never looking at the thing at the bottom. He had a long life, Dunk thought. He must have been closer to 60 than to 50. And how many men can say that? At least he lived to see another spring. Such goat tier status paragraph from George. Like, even if you didn't know anything about like winter and spring inside of A Song of the Ice and Fire universe, even that last line, like, he at least he lived to see another spring, there is so much weight on that one sentence alone, right? Obviously, you know, we know the difference between winter and spring and how it is a big difference. It's like making it to spring in this universe is a big deal because winters are so harsh. But also, like, the idea of Dunk being happy that at least he got something pleasant towards the end of his life. It's just such a that's why I love these stories, man. They're freaking goat tier.
Yeah, if you're perceptive enough, you can pick up on a lot of like subtle clues of how this world is, and also it's stated in a manner of which you just read it as fact, which I really appreciate. There's a lot of fantasy novels and normal novels, they'll go through the painstaking process of making sure you understand every single thing. So it could have been like, see another spring, because in Westeros, you know, and explain it after, it would just kill the momentum of that paragraph. But also, what a great picture for Arlen and also Dunk's relationship with Arlen. And the thing that I kind of thought about whenever I read this section was Dunk is making an excuse that does not matter so he can take the sword. Like, you can almost see like Dunk trying to rationalize in his head why he can't leave the sword, and eventually why he can't tell people he's not really a knight, perhaps. Mayhaps. So that is immediately we see Dunk kind of, I mean, almost lying to himself a little bit. I mean, he's not wrong. It will rust in the ground, but that's not why he's taking it.
Right. Right. And so it's like, I agree with everything you just said. And there are a lot of moments that even stuck out to me even more this time through, like really looking for all of the times. Like later when Dunk is there, he's asking him about being a knight and his ears get a little red. And he's like, well, you know, he said some words and I said there. Even just tiny things, like he thought his ears were getting red. And like, that's just something I don't think about as much, but it's there.
Yeah, show, don't tell, right?
Yeah. So, you know, then we move on a little bit. We meet Egg and, you know, again, we don't have to go over every possible detail. This could just be like a bigger discussion of it. But one of the things that stuck out to me a little bit later, so this is after Egg we've gone to the inn and everything, is Dunk looks at him. And this is so after they make it to the tourney, and he's talking to Egg and he says, I expect I'll be gone most of the day, he told the boy as he mounted. You're to stay and put the camp in order. Make sure no other thieves come about. Can I have a sword to run off with? Egg asked. He had blue eyes, Dunk saw, very dark, almost purple. His bald head made them seem huge somehow.
It's just like Ned Stark in Game of Thrones. When you reread it, you're like, this is so obvious that he's right. going to die. And it's so obvious that Egg is a Targaryen.
Right. Right. But it does add a lot of credence to people, like when they talk about like some of these characters who, oh, maybe, you know, like look at the way Tyrion, you know, mm-hmm. brings it up when he's with Aegon, you know, young Griff, and he's talking about, oh, I can see how like the blue hair does change the color of your eyes a little bit to make it seem. Which by the way, like Aegon, young Griff, is clearly a Targaryen or a Blackfyre, because most people don't have purple eyes. So it's not just some like random kid, at least.
Yeah, and doesn't Tyrion also have purple eye? Like,
no, Tyrion is, I think Tyrion is like blue and green, aren't they? Is it?
I thought no, that's it was like Jamie. Mixed. Color of Tyrion eyes. Let's see. Of one being green and the other being black.
Correct. Okay, yes.
The greens and the blacks.
There you go. Yeah. So, you know, but Dunk thinks about this stuff too. And he's like, you know, maybe I'll teach Egg the arts of battle, the same as you taught me, sir. He's a likely lad. Maybe one day he'll be a knight. And, you know, one of the things I never really thought about, there are moments out in this book where he thinks about Sir Arlen looking down on him.
A lot more than I remembered.
Exactly, because I remember in the show being like, oh, you know, does it break it up a little bit when Arlen's like looking and going like, I don't know, you know, but I should have read the book again, because he does think about it still. Yeah, I think in the context of the show, it doesn't happen often enough, you know, to.
Yeah, we didn't get full flashback chapters with Dunk. Right. Though I wonder, would George maybe write some in future novellas if he ever were to write them, which, you know, he most likely won't, but. It's kind of an interesting thought, but yeah, Arlen actually hangs pretty heavy over the story. So I like that they took that and expanded on it in the show. I think that's really good.
Yeah, agreed. Okay, Jimmy, again, this doesn't need, we don't need to go piece by piece through here. And I have some stuff that's going to tie into that big theory I did on YouTube. So I got
some questions for you if you want to answer.
So highlight that. Yeah.
So first off, did you like the book more than the TV show? We can ask that.
Ooh, that's a good question. Like, do I think it's one of those cases where the book is better than the TV show, or
which
do
one
I
just like more? Yeah.
I will say it is a phenomenal adaptation. It is one of the best adaptations ever. Right. I don't think for me it's like Lord of the Rings, in which I think the movies are better than the books. I don't care what people say. It's not. I don't care. The five super nerds who actually think, I like, you know, I was not a fan of the
it's actually TV. Not a great adaptation.
I was not a fan of the Lord of the Rings adaptations, if I have to be honest about it. Okay. So anyway, yeah. No, I mean I mean that's something we haven't talked about. This is one of the best adaptations of any book ever.
I really think it's pretty great. Yeah, I would agree with that.
I just have so much love for the books over these that it's.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm with you. I here's the thing, man. I feel like Dunkin' Egg is like a story that obviously it's written down and stuff, but like I formulated it in my head and have like my own pictures of how things looked. And I'm not a super imaginative reader, but I've read this enough times to where I started to kind of be able to take time and visualize, right? This is probably the craziest thing. And I wanted to ask you as a follow-up question. Do you now picture the show characters when you listen to the audiobook or read? Because I don't. I actually still think about like what I think of them.
It's definitely a little more of a blend this time. Through mm-hmm. it has blended in. Like when I read Harry Potter, I had watched like the first three movies and then dove into the books. I pretty much only pictured them as their characters. Mm-hmm. Wheel of Time was a little different because I got into the Wheel of Time books before the show.
Yeah.
And then I actually did not like some of the Wheel of Time casting and things like that. So that kind of stayed into my own versions of that. So yeah, I would say, but I don't really ever, like, when I picture characters, I don't really often picture them like super detailed in my mind. It's kind of like vague. Either. It's like vague figures. Like, I'll say
long,
like,
hair, broad shoulders.
Right. Yeah. Like when I think about like Moraine and Wheel of Time, I think about like, you know, blue dress, like, you know, hood, magic wielder.
That was good casting, by the way.
That was phenomenal casting. Yeah. That one was great. But same with Game of Thrones. A lot of people are, I have like stock characters in my mind that they kind of fit into.
Yeah. For me, I still imagine my own characters in Game of Thrones. Some have overtaken, like Littlefinger, for instance, absolutely matches the show. But like Sansa, a little bit of like Tyrion. Tyrion in my mind's very different.
Yes. I would say the book, a lot of it is a lot of the fantasy art that you see. And that's kind of, like when I think of Tyrion in the books, I definitely do not picture Peter Dinklage, and I definitely think of him a little more monstrous as it goes on, obviously
disfigured and everything else. I mean, Jamie also shaves his head in the books, right? And so like there's always things like that. But yeah, I was kind of surprised by myself. Like, I just visualized it like I had in the past, and I still had Dunk as really long hair, a little bit more tanky even, possibly, though let's be honest, Peter is a tank. I'm not saying he's not. He could stomp a mud hole in me and walk it dry as far as I'm concerned, but there's a certain like feel and look to it that I still have in my head, which I kind of like. I like being able to separate them. I think that that's pretty cool. So I like the book more than the TV show. That's not to say the TV show isn't phenomenal. Like you said, I think it's one of the better adaptations, if not one of the best. And it's just cool to have two versions of that story.
Yeah, more often than not, what happens is you're like, oh, the books are so much better.
Right,
typically what ends up happening. We were in this point where you're like, oh, man, no, the books are so much better. But I don't know, this one, there's a lot of stuff added to it. And I felt like that with early in Game of Thrones. There's stuff that is added in Game of Thrones that is cool and would have made the books better. A lot of the conversation, especially season one, that conversation between Robert and between Robert and Cersei, mm-hmm. or Robert and Jamie, or the conversation between Ned and Jamie, where he's like, that's one of the most badass things. That for me is like, it's up there in the top moments of all of Game of Thrones. Like, is that what you told him when you were stabbing him in the back? Oh, so like, would you tell yourself at night or whatever he says, man, to Jamie? So sick.
Yeah, dude, there are some pretty iconic moments that are show only. Is there a scene that you prefer in the books to what happened in the show?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. So this is one of the lines here is, I think they have it the other way in the round. So in the show, I think it's Egg who says, when they're talking about the star, so the luck is ours and ours and ours alone. Whereas in the book, it's Dunk kind of internally monologuing it, trying to pull that up here. And I don't know. I think I like it being Egg a little bit more in the show.
Okay.
Yeah. There's, so I would say that most of the stuff that was Dunk's that they give to Egg, I think I do like just a little bit more, because in the books, to be fair, Egg is better in the show because he's given a lot more to do. Egg in the books is actually like kind of really just Dunk's sidekick.
It's developing, right?
Sure, but it's really Dunk's story in the books, and Egg is a piece of that. Whereas in the show, it is Dunk and Egg.
Yeah, I did think Dunk dominated like the last 2 to 3 episodes a little bit, which is, I actually think he should.
He has to, because the focus is him and the tourney.
Also, the actor, Little Dexter, I mean, he just capitalized on like, the fight scene. I mean, when he get up, sir, you know, I mean, it's just like, he made the most of it, just like Valar did too. I mean, that guy knocked it out of the park. But yeah, I kind of agree with that. If I had to pick something in the book that I like more than the show, it would actually be Daeron. I always mess up how to say it. Yeah, Daeron. I actually like it more in the book, I think, than the show.
Yes.
It's so fast.
Yeah, in the show, they definitely kind of cut his importance down a little bit. It felt like it had more impact. But some of that is also just that they expanded the show, mm-hmm. and like all this stuff with Lionel Baratheon. So if you were to strip all that away, well, now Darren's stuff feels much more important because that thread line isn't muddied. Again, I'm using words to make it's not bad. I'm just saying, but as you expand things out, the impact of certain scenes falls off a little bit.
Yeah. And I think also it's a little bit of a like, hey, did you catch that piece? And what does it mean? And then you bring in the shopkeep or the innkeeper. You bring her back and then she says something to Egg that's crazy. And now you're starting to think about Darren a little bit more. So it kind of builds on itself, which is neat. Also, who do you think is like more dangerous, Arion or Darren? Because Darren at first just seems like a drunken, but he's kind of like all about fate and determinism, you know, in these prophecies. Like, is that actually more dangerous than Arion just being like a shithead?
Maybe.
I think in the long run, I actually think, I'm not saying he is based on like what actually happens in the story, but based on what we see in the book one, like I think Darren's almost a little bit more frightening, thinking about what someone will do when they think they know what's to come.
Sure. Okay. So yes, I agree. And I do have it pulled up here. So Egg falls asleep beside the dying fire. Dunk lays back. And so this scene is different in the show because Egg and Dunk are having a conversation. And so anyway, so Dunk is standing there and he sees the sky. He sees the stars falling everywhere. And one fell as watches a bright green streak that flashed across the black and then it was gone. A falling star brings luck to him who sees it, Dunk thought. But the rest of them are all in their pavilions by now, staring up at silk instead of sky. So the luck is mine alone. But I believe in the show, it's Egg who says the luck is ours alone. And so just a very cool little, I have to go back and watch, but I'm pretty sure that's one of the things I remember taking a note on. And yeah, I think Egg was a little bit cooler because it definitely built up. They needed that like bromance to build up a little bit, which is why I loved when they were like watching the tourney and hanging out. It was such a good scene to kind of build up a lot of this stuff in like a montage on television. I thought was a very good way to build up the thing. So I think that's why they gave Egg a lot of some more of Dunk's lines in the show to help build him up. And then again, he's so freaking good in the show. I mean, give that kid an Emmy, best supporting actor.
Something's gotta be nominated.
I mean, that was, oh, this show is definitely gonna get nominations.
It should. I mean, it was also very successful. So I think a lot of people saw it, which is always a good thing. I think, though, the Egg picking up some of the conversation lines are like internal thoughts. Like, that's the thing with novels is like we're usually in a character's head, whether it's over your shoulder in third person or first person, you're sitting in there. And third person's always, I think, a little bit easier to adapt. But even you have to like externalize a lot of that stuff because it is television. So it's a really good way of, one, giving Egg a little bit more, but still delivering on some of those internal thoughts, because Egg says, and we see Dunk like reflect on it, you know? So we still get the idea that Dunk is internalizing something there, which is really cool.
Yeah. Arion is much better in the show as well, because they give him more stuff, like even that scene where the Dunk is talking to the Kingsguard and Arion thinks he's like a stableman, you know, just kind of build that up a little bit. But Dunk does have some internal monologue where he thinks to himself, well, he does meet Donal of Duskendale and stuff like that. But then he goes on and he has some internal monologue here and he says, what'll I have to do if I have to ride against a prince? Will I even be allowed to challenge one so high born? He did not know the answer. The old man had oft said he was thick as a castle wall, and now he felt it. So there's a little foreshadowing that he is going to have to ride, you know, against a prince.
Yeah. And that is pretty neat to think about as a little bit of foreshadowing. Here's the next question I got for you. I'm giving you the third degree, Matt. I hope
you're fine. That's good.
Who was the most improved character from the book into the show? I think I know what most people will answer.
Well, I mean, it has to be Lionel Baratheon.
See, that's what I thought you'd say. I actually, by the end of the season, I think I pick Fosse away.
Well, him too. Yeah.
He's really good. Like he's really good.
He is. I would say him and Lionel. I think Lionel Baratheon is the best just because they gave him so much more.
They did.
Right. I mean, he gets a ton more, and it really has some implications later. Right. Like, yeah. Some implications for what will go down between those two later, that it's like, okay, now it makes that moment feel that much more significant.
Yeah, right? For sure.
Right. For sure. I mean, we knew that he's on his, he agrees to join him, but now it makes it feel such a bigger deal. There's just, so I have to go with him as number one, and I might have to go with Egg as, I mean, actually, I don't know. You could even argue Sir Arlen because.
Right. Sir Arlen's just, I mean, he's just present.
Now I will tell you, if I had to pick a character who I felt like had less impact in the show, I would say Tanzel Tootall.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I felt like her story got cut out a little bit, or maybe it, I mean,
when I found out I was going to be a parent, I immediately felt a lot of anxiety and worry. So I went on to BetterHelp to try to look for a therapist to help me with that.
My relationship with my family and with my boyfriend and with myself were suffering. I really needed help.
I was ruminating a lot. Really getting those thoughts out to a therapist and getting feedback was just life-changing.
Discover what BetterHelp Online Therapy can do for you. Visit BetterHelp.com today.
It's mostly there, but it feels like in the book, again, because once you start adding stuff, now it draws away from the story. Like if the story is just like John picks up an apple, okay, well, that is the story. We have the things. But if it's like John picks up an apple and then he went outside and then he went to the mailbox and then he went to in his car, you know, now him picking up an apple is not nearly as significant of a detail of the story. So I think that's really what happened for some of these characters. I would almost argue the same for Baylor Breakspear a little bit. Ooh, where he's phenomenal in the show, but again, once you start adding more to the story, it makes those moments not as significant.
Yeah, and runtime is a concern, obviously, because that's budget mostly. Sure. And then budget, right? Like they said, we would love to have shown you more stuff during the battle. Unfortunately, there is a budget that we have to follow. There's always constraints, which is one of the greatest things about books, Matt, is that there's no budget. I mean, there is a budget. You know what I'm saying? Like right. You can have as many special effects in a book that you would ever want. You can have the biggest cast of characters. You're not paying them royalties. It's all good. I agree with you. I think that Tanzel and Baylor maybe have a little bit more weight, though. I think they did a pretty knock-up job with Baylor's like importance post his death.
Sure. I would agree with that. And I still like they still hit their moments. Like they didn't cut anything away, but just by adding stuff, you then it doesn't feel as significant. Cause like in the books, Tanzel and Baylor feel a lot more significant because there isn't all this other stuff that they added, which was amazing. I mean, you want to talk about filler content. I mean, it's like the best filler ever. And you know, I guess it's like the difference of if you watch Lord of the Rings versus Lord of the Rings extended, you know what I mean? It's like the moments that are not in the extended cut now feel much more significant because there isn't all of this extra stuff. Although you should only ever watch the extended cuts because
I didn't know they made another one.
Seriously.
I think that those movies are great either way on it. Like I'll stop talking about Lord of the Rings. Here's the other thing about this. Sure. Tanzel could have had more, maybe Baylor could have had more, but how nice was it? We have to remember this is the show universe. People know Baratheon.
Sure.
Right. So people would like to see the Baratheons, right? And they know that name. So I think that that has something to do with it. But I kind of like again, the show is so much different. Now we have two renditions of the story, and I like both. I like what both kind of focus on and what they do.
The fight, should we talk about that? I mean, it's just different because...
Exactly.
In the book, first of all, Dunk feels like he knows what he's doing when he gets in there and he's talking and like he's like charging and he's like, you know, now thunder, or you know, and like boom, let's like hit, you know, thunder slams into the ground and here we go. And I mean, it feels like Dunk knows what he's doing. and you hear, you get to see a lot more about what's going on. So it's just two different ways to do it. I think that the way that they did it, and even the flashback and everything, I think ultimately, like, it still is totally fine.
I think they're both fantastic for different reasons. Like,
yeah, they're both. Yeah, I agree. They're both fantastic for, like, I agree 100%. They're both fantastic for different reasons.
Thunder's better in the book.
Yes, definitely.
George Wright's a good horse, in my opinion.
Yeah, Steely Pate might be another one. Again, same thing where it's like you have all the, it's just by same thing by adding, you in a way subtract.
Yeah, I think all the Steely Pate stuff is better in the book, for sure. I think I understand this, especially with the small folk. I mean, the book is very much Dunk representing the small folk, and you can even see that when he defends Tanzel, he's actually defending the small folk. Like, that's what we're supposed to take away from that. And then they're cheering him on as their guy. In the show, I think they take a different approach to it, which actually I still like, and it's kind of like, it's almost very cynical in many ways, but I think he ends up winning people over, and I like both. I probably like the book's rendition a little bit more there, but if we can go back to Baylor, I was thinking about this, and I don't want to get into spoilers, okay? So this is just immediate in the Hedge Knight, okay? We are relieved that Dunk lives, right?
Yes.
Is the world objectively a worse place because Dunk won?
That's a good question. That's what Dunk questions.
Like, that is kind of true. The more I think about it, the more I'm like, man, that is a really diabolical thing for George to do.
I mean, but then you think about all the things that Dunk does.
Well, that's why I said we got to look at it in the immediate.
Right? Like, what's to say? Again, this is a reread podcast, so we are assuming everyone, maybe we're going to
run away if you don't want spoilers.
Right. If you don't want spoilers, you're not there yet. Just we're going to say some spoilers here. Because actually, I went back through and because I was working on that theory, I went back through and I was looking up a lot of the Mystery Knight because I wanted to see Blood mm-hmm. Raven stuff. But yeah, I mean, Dunk puts down the second Blackfyre Rebellion. I mean, now Blood Raven is clearly there and he knows what's happening, but what's to say that he isn't able to at least quell it as much as he thinks he does, right? Because, I mean, there's alliances being made there. There's a lot to put down there. What's to say that some of that stuff doesn't get out, or, you know, it changes the narrative?
It does, yeah. I mean, I really want to reread The Mystery Knight now.
Oh, my God. I reread it, too, because I was working on that theory, which we will talk about here in a minute, but just phenomenal.
Yeah, again, these are all spoilers. So, like, Summerhall, I mean, like, there's something that happens in Summerhall, and Dunk certainly had a piece of it. And maybe without Dunk, like, Rhaegar doesn't get born, and then we don't get Jon Snow, and then maybe Cold Hands, if he is in fact Dunk, which
Brienne of Tarth.
Yeah, like, if you really think
possibly
about it,
Hodor.
It's like one of those long-term investments, like when you put money into your high-yield savings account and you're like, right, I wish I had that money right now. But you know, in like 20, 30, 80, 90, 120 years.
All right, we got to talk about the theory that I did, which I think is
okay. Yeah, this is a good transition, yeah.
Because now we got to talk about our good old boy Blood Raven. So, obviously, the biggest change in this compared to the show is the fortune teller. Hands down, that character mm-hmm. is not in the books at all, and drops the biggest bombshell prophecy of anything in all of A Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah, it's almost like Mystery Knight in the novels and the novellas, whatever you want to call them. Like, that's where you see that George has like a grander plan, and you're like, oh, this thing's opening up. And then, of course, he never wrote anymore. But yes, they put that hook in a lot earlier in the show, which is honestly very much appreciated, because I think it'll get people on the line for future seasons, hopefully.
So what did you think of my theory, real quick, and then we'll dive in.
Well, why don't you give people the rundown?
So essentially, I came up with this theory talking about who the fortune teller could be, and I went through a few various scenarios, one of which is it could just be the innkeeper herself. Like, they even mention in this book that there's nobody really at the inn. It's empty because everyone's gone to the tourney. So maybe she just goes to the tourney to try and make some extra coin because maybe. nobody Nobody's at the inn. I said, also, it's possible that with the budget constraints that they had, that maybe they were simply using the same person twice. Because you already paid somebody. Could be.
Put this foot on.
Right. Then I talked about the possibility of it being Shiera Seastar, which is a character, by the way, I do think we will see in this show.
That possibly, would be the coolest part.
Possibly next season.
Is it Jack and Hagar?
There's a character I thought would be in House of the Dragon. I really thought they should have done that. They still could pull the trigger on that. You could see even for a 1 second cameo when they're talking about the Blackfyre rebellions next time, being like it was civil war all over again. There were even faceless men. That one cameo, I'm telling you, would lose their minds. It would be he was in Stranger Things. He's not doing anything anymore. Bring him back. And so anyway, I talked about that. And then I talked about the idea of it being Bloodraven in current times, which, by the way, I want to bring a few things up. So the other things I noticed in my reread. Dunk, when he goes to the inn in the books. Now, again, I'm talking about then I get a little more deeper. But I talk about this and I say, when Dunk goes in there and the woman says, "Is my boy seeing to your horses or has he run off again?" That's a very interesting line for this innkeeper to say when she's talking about somebody who clearly isn't her boy, clearly has probably not been there that long because they're all heading to the tourney to see it. And then, you know, he run off again. What do you mean? So like he's been there and he keeps coming back. Like, it's just a very odd line. Then later Dunk thinks about it and he questions. He's like, "Oh, I thought that woman was your mother." And he also at a moment remembers, and I'm going to try to pull this up. He remembers at one point when he says the innkeeper had warned him of this. And what might your mother say to that? "My mother," the boy wrinkled up his face. "My mother's dead. She wouldn't say anything." He was surprised. Wasn't the innkeeper his mother? Perhaps he was only apprenticed to her. Dunk's head is a little fuzzy from the ale. "Are you an orphan boy?" You know, then they go on to it. So one, he thinks that woman warned him of the boy. So like, what's going on there? And then if it is, now maybe it could literally be George wrote it and they said, "How do we expand on this?"
Yeah, right.
Like, there's moments that George has said that he knows he messed up in the books. Like, why isn't Bran at the feast? Right. You know, but it could be a cool way for them to play with it a little bit. And because then if that woman does go on to become Bloodraven and Glamour, which would make a lot of sense, by the way, the Bloodraven would be there keeping an eye out on princes that have gone missing.
Especially if he has foresight, right? And he's being informed from the future. I mean, yes, absolutely. I don't think it's impossible.
So then I went even further and I talked about the possibility of something. I do believe they will HBO will do this regardless of whether this is the moment or not. I said, what if that moment, the fortune teller telling them the prophecy, is Bloodraven from the future of this event trying to influence the past the same way that Bran does with Hodor? And I think what could happen is that he tried and failed, because what he tells Bran, now this would be a show only.
Yeah. Show canon.
Show canon. Cause in the books it could still happen in the books. We don't know. We'll probably never see it anyway. So, but in the show, in like at season 6, episode 5, Hodor's episode, he tells Bran, "You can't influence the past. You can't do it." He doesn't say, "I've tried." He doesn't say he doesn't say that, like, maybe. So we don't know whether he himself has never been able to do it. He's clearly tried to do it, because how else would you tell Bran you can't do it? So does that mean that he tried to do something and nothing happened, or he did something and the same results occurred? Which is why I think perhaps Bloodraven, as Summerhall is happening, is seeing what's happening and is freaking out and is trying to fix it. And he reaches into the past to be like, "Well, I'll just change the past." And what would you think would be the moment that you could prevent? The first time Dunk and Egg meet. Now, this innkeeper moment could be like Dunk. That, like, in theory, that could be Blood Raven, Galamardus, this woman just keeping an eye out on Darren and Egg.
Sure.
But then separately, the fortune teller could be Blood Raven, like whether he's warging into her or something. That was the theory I presented.
It doesn't even have to be. He doesn't even, he could be years after Summerhall and still attempt to do this.
Sure. Too. But I don't think it would be Blood Raven now, because that would change some things. That would be like Blood Raven knows, unless he thinks something is going to, he would have to think something is going to happen. Maybe hear Darren talking about Dunk and being like, all right, I'm going to scare this kid back into his father's arms.
Hmm. Yeah, I think if you want to go show only, I think you could make it work. I really do. In the books, I think maybe the confusion and stuff is actually more of a George like misdirecting us, but also giving us a nudge that like this kid is not who he says. But share a C-star, that one, I like that.
Right. But in the right. So I'm talking about this mostly for the show.
Yeah.
But for the show canon, we know like Blood Raven has already appeared in House of the Dragon. You know, they're going to amp that up.
It's crazy.
They are going to make him Yoda. He is going to be the Yoda of Game of
Thrones.
That's
a messed up Yoda, dude.
Well, I mean, he is. He is going to be the central figure that continues on. And if you do that, it adds so much, it adds weight to, that's like, you know, I use Star Wars as an example, like, because the prequels came out and a lot of people didn't like them. So then the Star Wars Clone Wars cartoon came out and they expanded on so much stuff that it really kind of helped restore a lot of credibility. And a lot of people got hooked to these characters more to see what could happen. I think same thing, man, is you can use that to help bridge things and to build it up. And now it makes what is arguably the single like most mind-boggling moment in all of Game of Thrones, Hodor, it makes it that much more interesting. But does it take away some of the power? Does it make it like, because we don't know, is our Bran and Blood Raven equal, or is Bran specifically more powerful than Blood Raven? And we talk all the time about Bran influencing the past because we know he can do it.
Yeah, and how much of that is it partially because of his green seer ability? Sure. We don't know how that works. Probably we'll never know how that works. It doesn't seem like something George would explain, but we've always asked, like, where is the intersection between Bran and Blood Raven? Like, if it all just exists, like, don't they exist as, you know, it's time travel stuff. There's a lot of paradoxes to it. And we've also wondered and pondered about who was before Blood Raven as well. So I like the idea of Blood Raven having like some sort of motivation to have attempted and failed. I like that a lot.
And everything stays the same.
That's right. And then him to warn Bran, it kind of gives that line a little bit more.
Right. To use Doctor Who, it's timey-wimey. You go back and they influence stuff, but it still just happens. You know, I mean, that's what they say. That's what they say. And Doctor Who, remember, George is a big sci-fi fan. So he's very familiar with Doctor Who. So, yeah, I mean, there is time travel in this universe. Like, we know that exists because Hodor is going to happen in the books. You know, if it ever gets released, whatever. But we know for a fact that Dan and Dave did not write that. So
no, they even said that was one of the points George gave them.
Sure. So we know it exists. So why wouldn't Blood Raven try the same? Like, why wouldn't you don't think a person who now has the power to see into the past wouldn't try to alter things? Wouldn't try to fix up? Blood Raven's whole deal is trying to shift the realm.
Yeah,
in Mystery Night, when he captures Daemon Blackfyre the Second, he doesn't kill him, which is really interesting because it's the second that Aenys Blackfyre gets off the boat, who he invites,
he did invite him.
He invites him to the council, then kills him. He knows that for me, like rereading Mystery Night this time, 100% convinced me that Blood Raven knew about the Three-Eyed Crow before he went to the wall, and he specifically did that in order to get there.
Yeah, well,
because in Mystery Night, after the Tourney of White Walls is over, and Blood Raven has been there the entire time, glamored, right? So he's he is there glamored the entire time. So he's seeing everything happen. And then he obviously reveals himself at the end. I mean, he doesn't reveal himself, but he comes back in as Bloodraven, and you, the reader, put it together. And it's extremely obvious that it is Bloodraven. So glamored. And so anyway, what he does, he tears down White Wall and like scorch earths it to the ground so that nobody will even know it exists like 20 years from now. I mean, this, he's playing the long game, man. He knows he wants to put an absolute end to the Blackfyres and destroy like everything. This dude, it's why he's the coolest, most intriguing, important character in the whole series, because he is, as I say, connected to everything. He is the key to the entire A Song of Ice and Fire universe.
Yeah, and also, I mean, if we want to look at like a wider, bigger scope motivation to not want these Blackfyre rebellions outside of just the obvious, is that with the Blackfyre rebellions, there's a chance that maybe we don't get Rhaegar, and then we don't get the prince that was promised, and then we don't have our answer to the others, possibly, right? So he could be playing even a bigger game than it appears.
Right, because what's to say that, like, what's if Bloodraven... Like, let's say that Bloodraven, by the time Summerhall happens, he's in the cave and all this stuff goes down. He probably knows that Darren talked about this happening. And look at the events that happened with Dunk, right?
Yeah.
Baylor Breakspear dies.
He sure does.
And then what's to say later he doesn't have mixed visions like what? Look at what Daemon says. When Daemon sees the vision in House of the Dragon, he sees like dragons, and he sees Daenerys, and he talks about from our line, this will happen, right? So what's to say that Bloodraven doesn't get some vision where he sees Aegg and a dragon dying just like Darren does? And then what's to say also he doesn't see like Robert Baratheon, a vision of Robert Baratheon, and try to put it together to be like, no, this guy's going to end the Targaryen line,
or at least he thought.
Sure.
Did he see young Griff?
Who knows? If Dunk is Cold Hands, Dunk doesn't go to the cave, you know, what's to say Dunk doesn't get drawn to the cave or whatever, he just goes to the Night's Watch and then somehow Bloodraven draws him in or whatever, or who knows, maybe he seeks him out and he's beyond the wall, and he feels like it's the only thing he can do is to go search for Bloodraven, and he finds him. And what's to say he doesn't beg Bloodraven to try and fix it? Use your magic, use your sorcery, do whatever you have to do.
It could absolutely be the case. Also, like, could you imagine a scene in the books where like they're in the same situation, like, or the same room, and then he's just like, thick as a castle wall. Like, I would, yeah. My mind, I'd blow up. God, be sick.
Yeah. So anyway, that was my theory. I posted on YouTube, and
there's a lot to it. There's a lot of parts to it. I do think the most compelling piece to me is why does Bloodraven tell Bran that it will fail? Like, that does kind of allude to an attempt. And yes. I think then, and also in the books, if we want to look at it this way, Bloodraven's glamour in book 3, I think we are definitely supposed to think back now on books 1 and 2 and be like, was Bloodraven there too? Like, we're supposed to, like, if he could do that under the radar and he had
in this book, so by the time you get to the third book, it's different. But in this book, Bloodraven is not Hand of the King yet. So he's just...
That's right.
Yeah. He's just a prince. Yeah. Yeah. So it totally leaves him open to be doing anything.
Whatever he would want.
Right. But I will say the little birthmark that's on the woman's face, the fortune teller's face, and it's not there when she's the innkeeper... But again, that's why in the theory I say it could literally just be like production cost stuff. But I don't think so.
Who knows? What if she shows up next season? It's great, Matt. We don't have to wait 2 years to find out.
Yeah,
we'll have more next year.
What do you think? As we'll close up shop here. But what do you think about like the fortune teller and all that stuff?
I mean, I choose to believe it's Bloodraven. I think if you're going to have like a supernatural element to the show, it has to come through Bloodraven. because magic is far removed from the world at this point.
I mean, there's Darren too.
Yeah, there is dreams and stuff, but I'm talking like glamour is like tangible magic, like in front of our very eyes. And I think if it's going to come from anyone, it has to come from Bloodraven. I don't see them like adding a character unless if they do some like Melisandre callback or something. Cher Seastar, which could happen, right?
Which she goes missing. I think I have to look at the timeline, but she goes missing not long after this, like pretty much right after like Bloodraven becomes Hand of the King. But right now she would not be missing.
So she could show up. Definitely. Yes. I really hope we see her in the show. I think that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Do you think she's Quaithe, by the way?
I don't think I do not. I did a theory on just because I like to explore all the who's what's and what's. Yeah. I did one on if she's Melisandre. I think where I'm at now in my head is I think it's more likely that she is Quaithe. I do think she is still alive, but I'm beginning to think more along the lines. And this is something I kind of touched on in the theory a little bit, but just where I'm at in my head right now, I'm thinking that she and Bloodraven have differences in like opinions perhaps of the future or any of this stuff. And maybe because we know that like even though she is Bloodraven's lover, she is also Bittersteel's lover, you know, so she's kind of a wild card. But what's to say that she and Bloodraven, when she goes missing, it's not just her going over to Essos and saying, all right, I'm going to join Bittersteel now.
Could be.
And what if young Griffin theory could be her son?
That's
not her son. Sorry, but her like her Grand's line. Yeah. Right. Could be from her line. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you what. One day we should do like a Quaithe episode and then the next one do like a Cher Seastar, because I feel like out of all the characters that are like always postulated like about, I feel like those are the ones I know least about. Like yeah. I've never really put a lot of thought.
There's not a lot of details about Cher Seastar. So you really have to kind of,
you gotta stretch it.
You have to guess a lot, but I think it's just like her proximity to Bloodraven opens up a ton of possibilities.
Options, yeah.
Right. And you really have to kind of map out, which is actually why rereading this was really good, because it really, I think helped me, especially the Mystery Knight. It really helped me to kind of understand now that we have this context too, because at the end of the day, even if this woman is just like a Maggie the Frog, which some people were saying it is Maggie the Frog, it is not. Maggie the Frog does exist right now, but she like marries somebody.
I mean, the show could change it if they want.
Sure, but she marries like somebody noble, and it's, you kind of have to do I have the math, but like Maggie the Frog tells Cersei, you know, it's like the Valonqar and stuff like that, but it's still. This was direct. That's the thing about this theory. She's straight up like, you are going to die and you're going to die in a big fire. Yeah. Like what? I mean, it's, you know, there is no inferring. It's just straight up like, you're going to die in a fire.
Like, yeah. And you know, maybe that will be like the case, but maybe it'll be like ironic the way it happened. We don't know exactly, but I mean, it seems pretty accurate. Yeah.
Right. And the Mystery Knight ends with dragon eggs.
Dude. God, I wish we had all these novellas. There's pieces of me that want them more than the wins, honestly.
I feel like if he said I'm never touching the main series again, and all he did was finish Duncan Egg, I feel very confident that we would have enough pieces to put it together.
If it was finished Duncan Egg or wins, I would pick Duncan Egg. If it's just another Duncan Egg or two Duncan Eggs, I'd rather have wins. That's how I feel. But yeah, if we could get the complete Duncan Egg story, I would be thrilled.
Yeah.
Dude, who knows? I mean, he's obviously thrown away all of his like statements, right? Of like, I'm not working on anything. But like, who knows, dude? He might get fired up and release a few novellas.
I hope so.
Oh, God.
He should.
I hope so. Ugh.
Because you can't, I mean, to say like, I'm not going to release other stuff and then you release Fire and Blood, like, dude.
Yeah, and honestly, at this point, I don't even care. It could be Fire and Blood 2 for all. Right. I give a shit. I just want something from.
Because who knows if Paramount does end up buying HBO, and let's say Duncan Egg season 2, it's not going to. But let's just say for whatever reason, who freaking knows, that Duncan Egg season 2 does bad. Right? We didn't think House of the Dragon season 2 would do as bad as it. No, it didn't do bad, but you know what I mean. The reception of it was definitely a little more tainted than we thought it would be. I don't think that's going to be the case, but let's just say for whatever reason that it does. And they say, you know what? We're scrapping season 3. He may never get to tell those stories.
Yeah. Yeah, this is definitely like a consolation prize, I think, for him. And that's why he wants to be so deeply involved. And I will say,
I feel like he has to, because this is his chance to write. You cannot have the same thing happen to you that happened with Game of Thrones.
I mean, you could if you get paid $100 million.
Yeah,
I'd let a lot of shit happen to me.
I know, but you know what I mean. It's like, this is his chance in a way to right the wrong of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, it's definitely a second lease on creative life, I guess, is how you would have.
And
to
now,
say it.
And with this, you're just like House of the Dragon. You're just filling in gaps.
Yeah, yeah, and this way more so than House of the Dragon. I don't think he ever really thought he would have to fill gaps in House of the Dragon. I think he wrote it the way he wrote it.
Right.
Fun and let us do what we do. I don't think he probably ever imagined that the details would need to be fleshed out.
Right.
Which is why Dunkin' Egg's an easier show to adapt and also a better show. So
yeah, it's also shorter. So you're not writing
not
like you're writing Winds, where you're writing this like massive novel that has to be like the tie everything else together before the finale. So
yeah, I think people also are optimistic about Dunkin' Egg, whereas, I mean, if Winds of Winter came out, it'd probably be the number one selling fiction book.
Oh, yeah.
But honestly, I think like you would bring in a lot of new readers too with Dunkin' Egg, just because people are excited about the show right now.
Yeah.
Like there's still optimism for it, right?
Yeah. Okay, well, next week we will be back to the reread, by the way. And it is chapter 71, Daenerys 6, which I think is the final Daenerys chapter of the book.
Nice.
So with that, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. As I said, next week we will be into Storm of Swords, chapter 71, Daenerys 6.
And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheneepodcast.com.
We will see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.